You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
And that brings us to the International Desk with Lisa, where today we are discussing...
China. Yeah, we're going to China. Well, we're staying here, obviously, but in thoughts, we're going to China. Don't make fun of my things. And we're talking about actually a pretty serious thing, the centennial of the May 4th movement. Now, a lot is happening in and for China at the moment. It is slowly becoming one of the biggest economic power, thanks to, a development strategy called the Belt and Road Initiative, which I don't actually think I mentioned on air yet, but it would be worth definitely talking about. It will see massive investments all over the globe. We're talking all continents. It's very big. And it also is giving technophobes a reason to fear progress because of how China's very dystopian use of the latest technology to observe and control its citizens. So that's quite a few, just a couple of things that are happening in China at the moment that are kind of reshifting the power balance. But that leads me to what I'd like to discuss today, which is the commemoration of an event that most of our listeners probably don't know about, which I didn't know about before doing this segment, which is the May 4th movement. Now, my tablet has shut down, so I just need to open it again. There we go. So what is this movement? Before I talk about that, I need to mention that the years that finish in 9 in China usually means commemoration. Now, Westerners, much more so, I think that Chinese millennials might think about 1989 and the violent repression of protesters in Tiananmen Square, which we will talk about later. But the protests of 1989 were actually sparked by the commemoration of those of 1919, which I'm going to talk about now. So on May 4th, 1919, thousands of students from a dozen universities in China's capital city, Beijing, took to the streets and went to Tiananmen Square to protest imperialism and the incompetence and authoritarianism of their government. Just a little bit of historical context there. So before World War I, the Shandong Peninsula, which is a coastal area of China, part of China, became a German concession. Came World War I. At the very beginning in 1914, Japan seizes this peninsula from Germany. And after World War One, there's the Treaty of Versailles, which is basically all of the victorious allies gathered together near Paris to decide what would happen of German positions. And this treaty decided to let the Japanese keep the territory, that Shandong Peninsula, even though China had been on the Allied side during World War One. So the protesters, as I said, gathered to denounce this form of foreign imperialism and the lack of response of their government, which infused a strong sense of nationalism in Chinese society. But the protesters did not stop there. Sure, they requested these things, but they also aspired to create a new society, one that would value democracy and science, which were two key elements of the May 4th movement. And they would value those notions over the kind of feudal hierarchies that had ruled China all this time and the Confucius-inspired philosophy and traditions, that there was really this desire for a new emerging society. And so the May 4th movement is also credited to be instrumental in the birth of the Chinese Communist Party, the CCP, because Chen Duxiu, who was the dean at Peking University in Beijing then, he played a key role in the May 4th movement back in 1919. And he also was embracing Marxism and later went on to co-found the CCP. And since 1949 and the creation of the People's Democratic Republic of China by the Chinese Communist Party leader Mao Zedong, May 4th is celebrated as Youth Day. It's a reference to the young protesters who challenged their government and asked for more patriotism. And it is still called Youth Day today. But the significance of the movement has been mainly voided of its meaning, as we will see in a little bit. Now, before we talk about contemporary China and its commemoration today, I'd like to look at what happened in 1989, like I mentioned before. There was another student demonstration which was inspired by the May 4th movement. Hundreds of thousands of Beijing students protested peacefully, asking for more freedom and democracy in the spirit of this movement. And in the manifesto, they even referred to their action as the new May 4th movement. Back then, the country was starting to open up to the world in 1989, but there was no real domestic political reform, and corruption and nepotism were the norm, hence a strong demand for more democracy. However, the protests were met with a brutal military crackdown on June 4th, and military troops drove their tanks to Tiananmen Square and opened fire on civilians, killing hundreds, even possibly thousands. So the memory of this event makes the celebration of the May 4th movement quite risky for the regime today, which has been trying really hard to repress the memory of the massacre of June 4th. And each year, foreign journalists are actually banned from covering the event. It's been severely censored throughout the years, especially in the internet era, and to the point where actually most of Chinese youth, those under the age of 30, because that was 30 years ago, basically do not know of these events. It's like it never happened. Now, back in 2019, where Chinese leader Xi Jinping was on a pretty tight rope trying to celebrate the centennial of the protests while deterring people from commemorating the 30th anniversary of the protest of 1989. So how do you celebrate Youth Day of protesting and standing up while implementing a zero tolerance policy on student activism? That's quite a hard one. In an hour-long speech pronounced on April the 30th, Xi Jinping called the May 4th movement a great patriotic revolutionary movement, but he also said that while the party should listen to young people's idea, the youth ought to love their country. Or as Xi put it, obey the party and follow the party. So Xi Jinping added that those who are unpatriotic, who would even go so far as to cheat and betray the motherland, are a disgrace in the eyes of their own country and the whole world, which is pretty strong words. And so the ambivalence of the speech was not really lost on many. An international comment has been quick to point out the hypocrisy of the Chinese authorities, but also its rewriting of the true meaning of the May 4th movement. Now, if I'm doing a quick press review of what has been said on the matter, there's this opinion piece in the Hong Kong newspaper South China Morning Post that reminds its reader that the spirit of the movement resides in its yearning for democracy and anti-authoritarianism. And that was before the Chinese Communist Party turned it around and made it revolve around the notion of patriotism. We're 60 years into Mao Zedong's People's Democratic Republic of China, and there's still no real democracy, according to this opinion piece, despite a little more personal freedom. The commentator argues that China might be a strong economic power, but democracy is still worth pursuing, end of quote, saying that she longs for the movement's key figure of Mr. Democracy, as surely million others do too. Another Hong Kong newspaper, the Hong Kong Free Press, explains that the May 4th movement is not so much about the celebration of youthful opposition as it was made out to be about Xi Jinping's embodiment of Chinese nationalism. Xi talked about how the Chinese youth has to make full use of the spirit of May 4th, yet in his mind, the essence of May 4th is more the reinforcement of nationalism through the Chinese Communist Party. The notion of democracy has been willingly forgotten from the speech, and the journalist mentions Ta Kung Pao, which is a newspaper controlled by the government, which took it upon itself to attack critical articles which suggest that Xi Jinping is twisting the narrative, and that the government-controlled media has really embraced the official narrative, saying that the 1919 aspiration to democracy actually meant then a desire for a strong nation which could prosper because the youth loved their country. So there is this idea of like rewriting the meaning of what was then the idea. In Taiwan as well, the media is rather critical of Chinese authorities' interpretation of history. Online publication Taiwan News is calling Xi Jinping's speech an outrageously erroneous interpretation of the spirit of the movement. Explains that the Taiwanese and international backlash can be explained, by the hypocrisy of the speech, saying that Xi Jinping hailed the event of 1919 as a great patriotic revolutionary movement, although China, that's a quote from the article, China today is known for its intolerance and squashing of open dissent. The article quotes a Taiwanese history professor who says that the Chinese authorities have shown no interest in instituting a democratic system of government, adding that citizens attempting to express their opposition to the authorities are targeted for harassment, detention, and imprisonment, which leads me to my next point, which is that multiple publications around the world have actually relayed the news of the disappearance of student activists who have been recently detained after advocating for labor or human rights at the campus, including a group of four this year, just ahead of the commemoration events. The Financial Times discusses the six students from Peking University that went missing ahead of the commemoration. All fit the same profile. They're part of a network of young patriotic Marxists who have drawn inspiration from the May 4th movement to fight for workers' rights and criticize social injustice.
Just to clarify, that is this year that you're referring to?
Yes. So four students that went missing this year, just ahead of the commemoration. And there has been Marxist students across China that have begun to advocate for better rights. They see themselves as the kind of purest embodiment of the May 4th movement and its spirit. Yet they still fear harassment and arrest if they attempt to commemorate it on their own. Basically, there's only one way to celebrate this anniversary, and it is the government's way. You can't organize side protests or sideways to celebrate this anniversary. The Financial Times actually interviews a Marxist student who says that they can only really celebrate online and in a very small group, and it kind of defeats the purpose because they'd like to have this open, kind of large-scale celebrations. And the article also points out that the government has been pretty low-key, actually, for its celebration. Like, you'd think that it's the 100th anniversary of this movement, they would do big things. But because it is so potentially problematic for the authorities, they've been quite discreet about that. And the media coverage has also been pretty scant, sticking to the party's version of history, I suppose, which for the party is resistant to imperialism, rejuvenation on the world stage, and the strengthening of scientific development. And finally, a good article in The Economist, British publication The Economist, that decided to mention a potential shift in China by putting out how, although today's youth is way less likely to have open dissent as it was in 1989. There have been a few recent cases of activism in China that have been actually giving the government cause for anxiety. There was, for instance, a Me Too campaigning against sexual harassment that took place on campus. Like I mentioned before, the young Marxists that have tried to help factory workers establish a labor union that actually led to the police arresting dozens of those activists. And a few cases of academics trying to speak up to defend one of their colleagues that was suspended actually after criticizing Xi Jinping's authoritarianism. So, yeah, The Economist decided to look at those cases of dissent. They are pretty not numerous. What I wanted to say as a way to kind of wrap up this report is that the scale of China's surveillance of its people and the ease that it seems to have in doing so, I think, is a serious cause for worry. Thanks to technology, now you've got really easy access to propaganda material.
If I'm not mistaken, I believe the actual term Tiananmen Square is blacklisted on Chinese internet.
That's very possible. I know that because of fear of people even just knowing about the 1989 events, there has been heavy, heavy censorship regarding
it's
that.
It's an interesting state to be living in. It's I think that's why I believe certain like off kind of site organizing like programs are used instead of like general kind of like messaging services because of like how constricted people are. It was interesting. A family member of mine is working in China currently on a brief stint. And they're basically like, look, it's gonna be real difficult to communicate for 2 weeks. So if you're gonna message me, like just wait 2 weeks. So it's like to that extent, it's quite.
You mean specifically at that time?
Now?
Yeah.
Like this month?
Because of those celebrations and how
it's going to be. Yeah, just in general, I think, as well. But yeah, so that Does that bring us to the end of the international desk?
Can I just say one more thing?
Almost definitely.
There's a lot of things that are, like I said in my introduction, there's lots of things that are happening in China. There's lots of things that are happening for the people in China in terms of civil liberties and in terms of surveillance and propaganda. I've been actually reading quite a few articles lately about numerous examples of how the Chinese authorities kind of have a lot of power when it comes to that. You can look into there's this app that's been created by the regime where it's based on a point system, and for a lot of jobs you actually have to have the app, and it kind of rates it, it's all propaganda in there, and so each piece of propaganda within the app is worth a certain amount of points, and you have to have like daily requirements for certain jobs, which is, when you say sounds really scary, but that's kind of what's happening.
It's a scarier version of the US credit score system.
Yeah, and they have like a similar thing to that, actually, another app which kind of monitors how good of a citizen you are. So if you're a model citizen, then you have access to like half price public transports or free entrance into museums and stuff. But if you're not highly ranked, then as a model citizen, then you will be refused a loan, or you won't have access to certain professions. Like, this is very real, and it sounds like I'm quoting Black Mirror, but it's actually happening at the moment. So if you're in favor of civil liberties, and if you're kind of freaking out, just have a look at all these things that are happening at the moment.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.